Hey guys, welcome back. Thanks again for joining me on another episode of Follow Me Into the Dark. Hope everybody had an awesome weekend. Mine was super busy. It was my husband's birthday yesterday. Shout out, happy birthday, babe. And he also does a show, by the way. And so I jumped on air with him and co-hosted on his segment for the week. He does more of like a DJ playing music kind of podcast, as opposed to a podcast full of talking about something like for a whole hour. So the only downfall with that is if you don't have Spotify, it actually cuts out the music, so you can't really hear the music, which kind of sucks because it's pretty much full of music. But anyways, he does like 80s hair band rock and roll kind of stuff, which is totally our thing, by the way. You can look it up if you want to listen to it. It's Rock Brigade Show, and we actually had a special guest this week. He did, and so that's one of the reasons why I jumped on for his birthday episode. I've told you guys before, I think I've mentioned it before, maybe I haven't, that we're like total Vegas junkies. We love Vegas and we love going down there. And in particular, we like to go down to Fremont Street and listen to the bands. And of course, we haven't been back in a long time. We used to go all the time. Haven't been back in a while because, well, Vegas was shut down with this fucking pandemic. And the live music finally got going again on June 1st. So all the bands are back on Fremont Street, and there's one in particular called Spandex Nation that we love. It's all about the 80s big hair band kind of music, and the lead singer came on the show yesterday, and we were able to interview him. So, super awesome. So that was a lot of fun. So it was a busy weekend. So let's move along. Let's jump into this week's episode. So this is the second half of the Natalie Wood story that I began last week. If you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's episode, no worries. You can go back and listen, or, you know, I'll give you a quick recap. But if you want all the details, just go back and listen to last week's episode. So again, we're talking about Natalie Wood's life and how she began as a child star at age 4, mostly because of a controlling, crazy, psychotic, butterfly-killing mother. Again, go back and listen to the last episode for details on that. Crazy psycho bitch. My opinion, you know, you can form your own opinion on that, but yeah, crazy psycho bitch. But she grew into adult stardom, which is hard for most to do. You know, you look at these child stars and transitioning into an adult role and maintaining a career in acting is super tough. And she was able to do it. She was in a lot of movies that you've probably heard of. Miracle on 34th Street as a child, and the original one, and Rebel Without a Cause, and West Side Story, all big movies. Those are just a couple of the most popular ones. She was in a lot of other ones too. Splendor in the Grass was also a big one, but maybe not one you've heard of as much. She also had a checkered love life, which included marrying the same guy twice. Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood married young when she was 18, and long story short, didn't work out. Possible infidelity, busy working actors, a little bit of everything thrown into the mix, I think, and they were young. They divorced. They went on, they married other people, they each had a kid with other people, and they divorced those other people, and they eventually found themselves drawn back to each other. And so they remarried, and everything seemed happy and blissful and going well. Robert Wagner's career was taking off with his television show Heart to Heart, and Natalie was being a loving mother. And everything was going good, at least from everybody, from outside perspective, it looked great. So now you're up to speed. So now, Natalie wanted to kind of reignite her career as an actress. She'd been doing the mother thing and she was missing acting. So she lands a role in a movie called Brainstorm. And this is co-starring Christopher Walken. You know Christopher Walken. Of course, everybody knows Christopher Walken. You know, the guy who needs more cowbell. If you don't know that reference, then I'm sorry. But anyways, Christopher Walken. He was in Pulp Fiction. He was in Deer Hunter to begin with when he was young. Lots of stuff. He's awesome. But I have not seen Brainstorm. I might have to check it out. But the plot of this movie, let me tell you, the plot of this movie is that scientists invent a brain computer interface enabling sensations to be recorded from a person's brain and converted to tape for others to experience. But when people involved bring their personal problems into the equation, it becomes dangerous, perhaps deadly. Dun, dun, dun. So, sci-fi, for sure. So, who knows? I might check it out. Might not. I don't know. Anyways, this film began shooting in September 1981. And Natalie got most of her scenes done in the first 6 weeks of shooting. The problem is there was rumors that Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood were messing around. Now, whether or not that was true, no one knows. There seemed to be some noticeable connection between the two, but Douglas Trumbull, who was the director of Brainstorm, he said that there was a moment in the filming of Brainstorm that, in retrospect, proves to him there was nothing going on between Walken and Natalie. He said, there was a love scene between the two, a sex scene, actually, and I found out in the shooting of the scene that there was almost no physical charisma between them at all. And so that made me believe in retrospect now that the suggestion that there was some love triangle between Natalie and Christopher and RJ or something like that, whatever anyone would make of it, is not true. I just think it's impossible. That's what he said. But again, nobody really knows. Walken actually won Best Supporting Actor 2 years prior in The Deer Hunter, and he was a rising star in Hollywood. Robert Wagner was in his 50s, and although he made a successful transition into the television with Heart to Heart, he wasn't quite as the hot ticket as Walken was, as far as fame goes. Now, 1974, Natalie and Robert Wagner, they buy a yacht, and they rename it the Splendor. So, should you guys know this? Did you know that you aren't supposed to rename a boat because it's bad luck? Legend says that when every ship is christened, its name goes into a ledger of the deep, maintained by Neptune or Poseidon himself. Renaming a ship or boat means you're trying to slip something past the gods, and you will be punished for your deviousness. A little creepy, huh? And does anyone else find it odd that they named the boat Splendor? Like, one account says that it's not because of the movie. Somebody else said it was because of the movie. But think about it for a second. Would you name something after something else that may have been something that led to the downfall of your first marriage? Like, I know it was one of her big movies, and she got an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress for her performance in that movie. But come on. You were suspected of having an affair with your co-star in that movie, and a divorce soon followed. So, kind of an odd name to name your boat, I think. Anyway, let's talk about what happened on that boat. It was Thanksgiving weekend, 1981. Now, remember at the time, she was making a movie with Christopher Walken. Natalie invited Walken on the trip to Catalina for that Thanksgiving weekend. And it's unknown why Walken's wife didn't join. Also, there was RJ and Natalie's boat captain, Dennis Davern, who was their captain when they bought the boat. And he had been ever since, and he was around for years. And he actually became very close to them. He said it was more of a friendship than being an employee. He said RJ did most of the stuff on the boat anyway, and he was just there to take care of the things that RJ didn't know how to do. Again, I keep saying RJ. If you didn't listen to my first one, that might be confusing you. RJ is Robert Wagner. That's what everybody calls him, RJ. So, moving on. So, it's Catalina. It's November. So, it's not really the touristy boating time of year. It's not exactly the ideal time for weather and water conditions for boating. Natalie had said in an interview once that she liked being able to get on a boat and just separate from all the craziness, because they were always in the limelight. They were always, you know, like paparazzi type stuff. There's people always watching them, and on the boat, you could get on the boat and go out and get away from everyone. So, they were out there Thanksgiving weekend. But the final days of Natalie's life would be filled with drama, jealousy, rage, distrust, and ultimately her tragic death. Things were even rocky the previous night. Wood was accompanied by Davern to shore the night before she went missing, because Wood reportedly couldn't handle the tension on the boat, according to the captain. Wood and Davern stayed at the Pavilion Lodge in two separate rooms, and a receptionist there said that they both appeared to be intoxicated. So, moving on, the next night. According to Davern, Wood and Walken spent hours at a bar on Catalina Island, laughing and seemingly flirting. When her husband shows up, RJ shows up, he was fuming. The four proceeded to have dinner at Doug's Harbor Reef restaurant, drinking champagne, two bottles of wine, and cocktails. At one point, Wood or Walken threw a glass at the wall. Employees said this. Doug Whiting, the night manager of the restaurant where they all were dining at, was concerned that the four, who drank several bottles of champagne at dinner, were too intoxicated to make it safely back to their yacht in a dinghy. FYI, the dinghy's name was Valiant. Prince Valiant, by the way. You know, that movie that I talked about that Robert Wagner was in, where he had the ridiculously silly wig. Anyways, Whiting was so concerned, in fact, he asked Kurt Craig of the Harbor Patrol to make sure that the group got back safely. So, the details of how this night played out are really uncertain. There's a few different changing stories. But what is certain, Natalie Wood's worst fear of deep, dark water came true that night. Wood's body was found a mile away from where the boat was anchored. This was just before 8 a.m., and the dinghy was close by as well. She was wearing a flannel nightgown, knee-high socks, and a down coat. Her skin was bruised, and she had a scratch on her face. There had been a lot of tension and shouting that night, and drinking. Lots of drinking. Was it a drunken accident, or was Natalie Wood killed? Different stories emerged from that night. RJ acknowledges that he and Christopher had an argument that night. He said that Christopher went to bed, he stayed awake, but when Robert did go to bed, he noticed that Natalie and a dinghy attached to the yacht were missing. An LA County Sheriff's investigator said he believes that Robert hasn't been completely forthcoming with all the details surrounding that night. I haven't seen him tell the details that match all the other witnesses in this case, said Lieutenant John Carina in an interview with CBS's News 48 Hours. I think he's constantly changing his story a little bit, and his version of events just don't add up. RJ stated that Natalie wasn't there when he went to bed, and that she must have slipped and fell, leading to her death. But RJ does open up more about that night's events in his stepdaughter's documentary, which, by the way, his stepdaughter, she backs him up all along, saying that there is no way that he would have killed her mother. She says absolutely, 100%, there's absolutely no way that he would have killed Natalie Wood. So, again, RJ says that Natalie and Christopher had been discussing whether or not she would quit acting to take care of her family, and Christopher urged her to keep acting. According to RJ, he admits that this made him mad, causing him to smash a wine bottle, and he asked Christopher Walken to mind his own business. So there's a fight. Natalie walks out. Eventually, Christopher Walken goes to bed. Around 11 p.m., it's noticed that Wood is missing. 2 hours later, a call was made from the ship to shore, and it took another 2 hours before the Coast Guard was finally called. That is 4 hours from the point Wood disappeared before the Coast Guard was contacted. That decision to wait has been heavily scrutinized over the years. And from what RJ says, it kind of sounds like he didn't want the attention drawn. He didn't want a big deal made out of it, maybe. He didn't want the searchlights on and all of that. There are only two possibilities. Either she was trying to get away from the argument, or she was trying to tie the dinghy. Wagner wrote this. But the bottom line is that nobody knows exactly what happened. I went below and Natalie wasn't there, he continued to say. Strange. I went back up on the deck and looked around for her and noticed the dinghy was gone. Stranger, I remember wondering if she'd taken the dinghy because of the argument. And then I thought, no way, because she was terrified of dark water. And besides that, the dinghy fired up so loudly, we would have heard it, whether we were in the salon or on the deck. In an interview I watched with Davern, and oddly enough, Zach Baggins from Ghost Adventures, on an episode of Ghost Adventures Artifacts, Davern, the captain, after Zach asked him, how do you know she didn't just get angry and try to take the dinghy back to shore? Davern says, she would have called me and said, Dennis, can you move the boat? And that's my job. She wouldn't have done that. I guarantee she wouldn't have. After a 2-week investigation, the death was ruled an accident. Thomas Noguchi was the coroner at the time. He was known as the coroner to the stars. He performed autopsies on Marilyn Monroe, Sharon Tate, John Belushi, Janis Joplin. And a little side note, he also appeared in the documentary called Faces of Death as a medical examiner. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? This show is like early 80s, and it was like a documentary. And it was like, I don't know, different instances of death. It was pretty disturbing. I remember watching this in high school, and holy fuck, is it disturbing. Footage of like different deaths, real deaths. It's like super twisted and unsettling. So anyway, moving on. Thomas Noguchi. There's a press conference, and he states, she attempted to get on the dinghy, slipped, and couldn't get out to the boat. So, the combination of cold water, alcohol, the down jacket, which, by the way, this down jacket, they're saying, was a big factor. It would have really weighed her down. I guess this thing was, like, wet forever afterwards. Just so saturated with water is what that means. And they say if she would have actually taken it off, it might have saved her life. Her autopsy also shows that her blood alcohol level was 0.14. So, pretty intoxicated. And she also had, in addition, in her system, she had painkillers and motion sickness pills. But there is one thing he said that was kind of a slip up on his part, because it started bringing up speculation and giving people reason to question things. What he did was he tells everyone at the press conference that there was an argument. So, you know, you throw a little drama in the mix and the media is going to go wild. So the question is, why did she leave the boat? She had a flannel nightgown on, knee-high socks, and a down jacket, like I had said. Not what somebody would really be wearing if they were going to go into town. Especially her. According to her sister, she never went anywhere without being made up, like makeup, hair done, you know, looking good. But the death certificate rules this an accident. When they investigated and looked around on the boat, the reports say that the boat was in disarray. They found, you know, the broken wine bottle, of course. There's clothes tossed around in the stateroom. Also kind of curious is the fact that none of the three men were inspected for signs of a struggle. So They didn't even look to see if there was any scratches, any signs of a physical altercation with any of these guys. So moving on, 2011, the LA sheriff takes another look at the case, and the LA County Sheriff's Department reopens the death investigation. The new medical examiner said that there are bruises that cannot be explained. This is kind of what reopens the case. And in 2012, the LA Coroner's Office amended the death certificate, changing the manner of death from an accidental drowning to drowning and other undetermined factors. She looked like the victim of an assault, says Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department Detective Ralph Hernandez. We have not been able to prove that this was a homicide, and we haven't been able to prove that it was an accident either, said Hernandez. The ultimate problem is we don't know how she ended up in the water. Dr. Michael Franco may be able to provide a little missing link. Franco, a family medicine specialist in Los Angeles, was an intern at the LA Coroner's Office when Natalie Wood's body was flown to Los Angeles County and USC Medical Center from Catalina. As a volunteer intern in 1981, he wasn't listed as a coroner's employee and therefore would not have been questioned. Franco observed what he is certain is critical physical evidence on Natalie's body that establishes her death was a homicide. For 40 years, Franco has kept silent, not wanting to be pulled into the media circus. But after decades of reflection, he decided that coming forward was the right thing to do. What Franco observed and found suspicious were the bruises on Natalie's anterior thighs and shins, bruises he describes as friction burns. What struck him as wrong, I remember the striations were in the opposite direction of somebody trying to get onto a boat. It was almost like somebody being pushed off. And because of the significant amount of the bruising in the lower anterior thighs and shins, that's what caught my attention. She would have had to have been pushed forcefully off, or there was a force that was pulling her off or something. The amount of noticeable bruising to the thigh shouldn't have been there. Franco took it up with Dr. Noguchi. I mentioned to him the abrasions on Natalie. I told him I was having trouble understanding them. I said that they seemed to be in the opposite direction of what one would expect as to her cause of death. I remember I told him who I was, and he hesitantly stopped doing what he was doing, looked up at me, nodded his head, didn't say anything, and then he continued doing what he was doing. What he said was, some things are best left unsaid. There's another possibility. What if Wagner dropped the dinghy to make it look like Natalie had gone ashore, which was the story he gave to police? Davern said he heard the dinghy being dropped into the water after the horrible fight he overheard on the rear deck, and that he saw RJ somewhere near the dinghy. The next time Davern saw him, he was sweating, looked like he'd been in a struggle, and said the dinghy was gone. The last words that Davern heard him say to Natalie were, "Get off my fucking boat." In his revised police statement, Davern said that RJ refused to let him turn on the searchlights to look for Natalie. The striations that Franco saw on her body at the autopsy are consistent with the possibility that Natalie tried to hoist herself onto the dinghy from the water. Someone, Franco said, was pushing her down and wouldn't let her stay on. Franco believes that the LA Coroner's Office covered up the true case of Natalie Wood's death. Whatever they decided wasn't going to be questioned. The most logical explanation that doesn't involve foul play centers on a noisy dinghy and Wood's inability to swim. The weather was also poor with lots of rain. Was the dinghy banging against the side of the boat and annoying her, keeping her from resting, so she attempted to secure it herself? Would she have done this? This is the big question, really. On one hand, she was extremely fearful of water. So you would think, no, there's no way she would have done that. But at the same time, she's fighting with her husband. And I know if I'm in an argument with my hubby, and then I find myself needing something done, I'm not going to ask him for help. We're fighting, But also it's kind of like, well, I'll show him. I don't even need him. I can do it myself. Right? I don't know if anybody else is like that. That's me. So who knows what was going through her head. So now 2013, Dennis Davern comes out and he tells 48 Hours and the Today Show that he initially lied to authorities about what happened that night. He now blames Wagner for Wood's death. Lana Wood, Natalie's sister, has also said that Davern called her one night when he was drunk to confess Wagner had a hand in Natalie's drowning. So this is how he explains that night. He says, "We returned to the boat after some dinner and some drinks and stuff like that. Everyone was very drunk. I don't think Christopher was hitting on Natalie, but the way RJ saw it in his eyes, he was. The anger was just incredible. It was horrible. Davern remembers one thing RJ said, and that was, 'What are you trying to do, fuck my wife?' Then he smashed a wine bottle. Christopher Walken decided to go to his room. Natalie went to her room. RJ followed." He went on to say that fighting continued. "It was bad. Things were being thrown around. He said it was a horrible physical fight. He told me to go away when I knocked on the door. I went up to the bridge. Then there was silence, and I needed to check. RJ told me Natalie is missing. 'Can you check on the boat? Is she anywhere on the boat?' he asked. I went to check Walken's stateroom. I opened the door, and he was asleep, or at least he appeared to be asleep. Whether he was actually asleep or not, I don't know. I came back to RJ, told him she's not on the boat, and we need to turn on the searchlights. We need to notify people. We need to find her. He said RJ's response was, 'Let's have a drink.' I feel like he was just getting me drunk more and more. And finally, after a long time, we notified people." He said RJ said something along the lines of, like, "Let her sweat it out a bit," or something like that. So then, you know, after a long time, they finally contact someone. So Wood's body turns up the next morning a mile from the yacht, and the dinghy was found beached nearby. Davern told 48 Hours, "Natalie would never in a million years take the dinghy out by herself." Davern told Vanity Fair that he felt like a prisoner in Wagner's home, which was protected by an alarm system, in the days following Wood's death. He says the men would cry on each other's shoulders with a glass of scotch in one hand and an arm around the other. "He used to give me checks," Davern said. $1,000, $2,000. "My friend said it was hush money and that RJ wouldn't want anything to do with me after Splendor was gone. I used to tell him that RJ wasn't like that. He was a real friend to me." He said it appeared to him as though Wagner shoved her away and she went overboard. Davern panicked and Wagner said, "Leave her there. Teach her a lesson." Davern went on to say he doesn't think Wagner intended for Wood to drown, but he didn't do anything to help her. So what about Christopher Walken? Was there something going on between Natalie and him? Davern claims Wood became infatuated with Walken while filming Brainstorm and openly flirted with him. When they were in North Carolina together, rumors were going around about Christopher Walken and Natalie. "So RJ went down there," Davern said. "He had a few days off from Heart to Heart, but he wasn't about to make a fool of himself over this." Natalie's sister, Lana, also thought Natalie had a thing for Walken. She said, "I don't know if Natalie's love affair with Chris was imaginary or real, though my strong suspicion is that it was all in her mind and that perhaps she was only wishing it to be so." 5 years after Wood died, Walken told People, "I don't know what happened. She slipped and fell in the water. I was in bed then. It was a terrible thing." He added, "Look, we're in a conversation I won't have. It's a fucking bore. What happened that night, only she knows, because she was alone," he said. "She had gone to bed before us, and her room was at the back. A dinghy was bouncing against the side of the boat, and I think she went out to move it. There was a ski ramp that was partially in the water. It was slippery. I had walked on it myself. She had told me she couldn't swim. In fact, they had to cut a swimming scene from Brainstorm. She was probably half asleep." And again, in 1985, Christopher Walken went on to say this: "The people who are convinced that there was something more to it than what came out in the investigation will never be satisfied with the truth. Because the truth is, there is nothing more to it. It was an accident." Now, at a press conference in February of 2018, Captain Christopher Bergner of the Homicide Department said, "New witnesses and those with relevant information have been identified, and a different timeline has emerged of Natalie Wood's last hours on the boat and when help was requested." John Carina, a lieutenant in the LA Sheriff's Homicide Bureau, note the autopsy report indicates there was a number of bruises that appear to be fresh on Wood's body. Now, at this press conference, it also came out that Robert Wagner was now a person of interest in her death, and they would like to speak with him again and hear his version of events. "The new witnesses," he said, "were people in boats moored near the Wagner yacht who heard a couple loudly arguing, as well as a woman calling for help. Marilyn Wayne, a retired stockbroker whose boat was anchored near the Splendor, said she received a written death threat 3 days after Wood's death. The note read, 'If you value your life, keep quiet about what you know.' Wayne was disturbed by the note and contacted her attorney. Wayne claims that on the night of Wood's death, she heard someone cry for help around midnight. 'My cabin window was open. A woman's voice crying for help awakened John and awakened me. Help me. Someone please help me. I'm drowning,' is what she heard. Wayne insisted she tried to contact Harbor Patrol, but no one responded. She also called the local sheriff, who informed her a helicopter would be sent to the scene. However, Wayne said it never came. She also asserted that she heard a man's slurred voice say, 'Oh, hold on, we're coming to get you.' They say Wagner, Carina, the lieutenant, says that Wagner's a person of interest because he was the last one with Natalie Wood, and somehow she ended up in the water and drowned. Davern's motivation seems somewhat biased to me, though, honestly. I don't know how much you can believe him. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about this. Maybe everything he says is true. But him coming out and co-writing a book means that there's profit from a book. He says he's not looking to profit from anything that he's talking about, but isn't he? He's selling a book, right? So the end result is still financial gain. So I find it hard to put a lot of faith into what he's saying. He'd been trying to hawk his part of the story to the highest bidder in tabloid land for years, apparently. There was an appearance in February 1992 on Geraldo Rivera. And when Davern was filmed without his knowledge with author Marty Rulli, with who he was writing the book with, Rulli is heard prompting Davern to tell Geraldo they were yelling and screaming at each other to get off the boat. Davern is heard responding, "Oh God, I don't know if I can tell them that or not." Rulli angrily replies, 10 years of this, Dennis. This needs to be cleared up. We have to say how she got in the water, Den." Rulli is heard suggesting to Davern to go tell Geraldo, "Don't you tell them how she got in the water. We put that in the book and we'll make billions from it." So again, money is to be made. But as far as Lana is concerned, the notion that Natalie accidentally drowned after getting into a dinghy alone on a stormy night is ridiculous. Let's be truthful about who she was and how she was, says Lana. "I'm not making judgments. I'm not supposing. I'm not doing any of those things. I'm simply looking at facts. Natalie didn't swim. Her fear of dark water was deeply ingrained." Lana Wood now refers to Natalie's death as a murder. She recalls a conversation with Natalie's agent. "A few days after Natalie drowned, he dropped by to see Lana. he'd just been to RJ's house, and he said that RJ told him what happened that night on the boat. "I would tell you, but I don't trust you," he told Lana. "What do you mean?" she asked. "Well," he replied, "someday you're going to say something, and I don't want RJ hurt. Nobody needs to be hurt anymore." Again, a lot of things being said. Any proof behind it? Any truth behind it? I don't know. RJ says, "I don't think there's ever been a day that has gone in my life that I haven't thought of Natalie and how much she meant to me in my heart and my soul." Again, he holds to the story that it was an accident. So I mentioned before about how an interview Davern had with Zach from Ghost Adventures. And Zach actually possesses a few artifacts from the boat, the Splendor, and he has them at his museum in Vegas, which I'm going to go check out this summer, by the way. I can't wait to go check out that place. He has the table that the bottle was smashed on, that bottle of wine, and he has some candles, he has life vests, he has the radio that RJ used to call for help from the boat. In that episode, he also had the current owner at the time, because this has been a few years back, the owner, Ron Nelson, and they were talking about how he has experienced things on the boat, saying basically he thinks Natalie Wood's ghost is on the boat. One instance, he says the phone started ringing, and the phone was in Natalie's room. He thought, who would be calling? He went down the steps, and he said it felt like someone grabbed his leg, and he fell. He had to have 40 stitches in his shin. He said the scar is in the shape of a V, like Valiant, the name of the dinghy. So that's kind of a stretch. It's not like, first of all, a V is like some complex or odd shape. And, you know, and then you could also say V stands for anything. It could stand for, you know, a viper fish. So she's telling you from beyond the grave that a viper fish was the culprit. So, you know, that's silly. That's a stretch. A V, that's kind of stupid. He said he also got the boat blessed by a Hawaiian priest. And he said that the priest said, "There's so much sadness. I'm having a hard time." And he noticed a tear from under the priest's sunglasses. After blessing the boat, the priest went to the top of the boat, said it's time for the bad to leave and good to be welcome. And when he said this, the atmosphere changed quickly from hot and humid to cold, crisp air. But now the yacht Splendor is sitting as a scrap heap. It actually racked up nearly $12,000 in illegal mooring fees, and it cost the state almost over $14,000 to get rid of the yacht. It was in really bad condition, and it was in danger of sinking, and so it was finally hauled away. In that episode, Zach actually also interviewed Lana. So here's something else that pops into my head when I come across this episode. Zach from Ghost Adventures is interviewing Davern and Lana. Davern and Lana agree to go on Zach's Ghost Adventures artifact show and talk about Natalie Wood. That, when you see people kind of jump on to any opportunity to interview or talk or profit, that to me is also kind of a red flag. Again, I don't know if what they're saying is true, but when you see people go on that kind of interview, I mean, it's Zach Bagans. It's not Barbara Walters, right? Just my opinion. I mean, so again, how much of it can you... moving on. So he asked her, "What do you think happened to your sister that night?" She says, "Alcohol, anger. I don't believe for an instant anything was done purposely." She goes on to say of RJ, "I'm not angry with him. I won't hate." So, I don't know. Again, you've seen a lot of Davern and Lana over the years. You know, is it for financial gain? Or are they truly just seeking justice for Natalie? You be the judge of that. You know, Lana confronted RJ once, and it kind of seemed like it was staged, the way she was very careful with what she was saying and, like, trying to get him on record of saying, because it was such a clear recording. She acted like, oh, what are those people doing filming us? But you could clearly hear, you could hear her voice over his voice as if she was wired. And, you know, she's like, I know we're all hurting, and, you know, you never came out and said what happened that night. And he's like, what are you doing? Why do you keep dredging this up, basically, is what he's saying. He's like, I have come out and said, I've talked to everybody, you know, just let things rest now, is kind of what he was trying to say. So, I don't know. In the end, the only person who truly knows what happens is Natalie, the one person who can't talk. My honest impression, I think it was a combination of the stories that we've heard that make up the truth. Number one, there was fighting. There was jealousy. Whether or not something was going on with Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood, that doesn't even matter. What does matter is that RJ thought, or he was concerned that there was something going on. Some people say there was nothing going on between Walken and Woods. Some say they saw flirting with each other. Maybe it was just flirting. Maybe it was more. I don't think we'll ever know. Number two, there was a lot of outside influences, a lot of factors that night, like drinking, a lot of drinking. And of course, that always fuels a fight, that fuels a fire. She also had other medications in her system. It was also a cold night. There was rocky water. On top of all of that, there was a loud party going on shore. So did he push her? Or did she slip? Did he push her and then decided to mess with her or do something to show control or just get revenge or payback for the flirting? Just torture her a bit? Or she slipped and fell. And he knows that she slipped and fell. And again, decides to just leave her there to teach her a lesson. Like it was just drunken stubbornness on his part. I can kind of see that. You know, you're drunk and you're pissed off and, you know, let her sweat it out for a while or whatever. He might not have pushed her intending for her to go in the water, but if things got physical and he did push her and she went in the water, did he knowingly leave her there? Did he not realize it right away? I mean, those are all the questions that we don't know. That's, you know, and that's why you have to look at the hard evidence. You look at the bruises on the body, you know, and you hear all those bruises and striations and marks and things that I just talked about from that intern. But you also have to take into account that that's an intern. I know when somebody comes along into my world at my work, what I do, a newbie is not going to know all the stuff I know after being there for 20 years. So again, those are all things you got to look at, all these factors. You know, she ended up in the water, whether intentionally or accidentally. He either knew right away or didn't know right away. Those are the questions. How did she get in there and why was she in there for so long? But I don't know. To say he murdered her with malice and intent, I don't know if I'd go that far. You know, the bruising that shows a struggle prior to drowning, a physical fight happened. He intentionally pushed her off the boat. He didn't intentionally push her off the boat. But it does really seem like he left her there. Or at least didn't feel like he had the need to search for her for whatever reason. He didn't want to, or he didn't feel like he needed to. And what I also find odd is the fact that the dinghy was near her body. And it was said that it had the key in it and it was in neutral. If she was just trying to secure it because it was bumping against the side of the yacht, would it have the key in it and be in neutral? What comes to mind when I see that information is that it was released from the boat, the key in it, put in neutral, and pushed off so it could drift away. and go along with the story of it being that, you know, she had it and she fell out of it and she drowned. But honestly, I don't know anything, absolutely nothing about boats. So please, if somebody with any knowledge of boats has a theory on that one, I would love to know your thoughts on it. Because that's one that I don't know. That seems really odd to me. So what happened to her that night? Will we ever know? The case is still open today. They aren't saying much about it. So who knows what'll come of it. I don't know if they're not saying much because they don't have much, or if they're just trying to keep things hush-hush. But who knows? It's still a mystery. It's still unsolved. It's still an open case. What happened to Natalie Wood? Sad. You know, she was a beautiful star. Just, you know, it seemed like she was beautiful inside and out. And, I mean, she really was. And she wasn't beautiful in that, like, Marilyn Monroe blonde bombshell kind of way. She was just kind of a classic beauty. And it seemed like she was a great mom. And she worked hard and she grew up with the crazy bitch of a mother and just became somebody so great. Continued acting into her 40s. And so, you know, what happened to her? You know, who knows? And who knows if we'll ever know? So it's just a sad, sad Hollywood story. So, again, so that's it, guys. That's the story of Natalie Wood. Again, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I love old Hollywood. I love old Hollywood and all their stories. So I'll be doing some more old Hollywood stories. So you can follow me on Insta and Facebook, and the links are in my description. And also you can contact me, follow the dark podcast at gmail.com. Next week, my episode will be on the Bell Witch. We're going to go back to something a little more creepy, scary. You know, I'm kind of in that mood, like I was wishing Halloween was right around the corner. It's not, unfortunately. But I'm going to do Bell Witch. So we'll see. I'm also going to be hitting Vegas this weekend with my hubby. So we'll see. You know, I might be a little hungover while I'm doing that episode. Shit, I might still be, you know, shit-faced. Who knows? Who knows? Anyways, thanks again for listening, guys. And I will talk to you next week. And until then, stay dark, my friends.